Hello and welcome to Climate Emergency Manchester. We're back after a much needed break, campaigning for climate action in Manchester. Our main focus was and is with Manchester City Council, MCC, who we would argue should be taking a much tougher leadership role in the city. We kicked off last season with a few short explainer podcasts. If this is your first time with us, welcome. It might be worth checking those out to understand where we're at. But if you don't have time, this episode is going to be a bit of a recap. So what's new with MCC since we last spoke? What's the same? And what's worse? I'm here with Lauren and Chloe. Welcome both.
Hi.
Hey.
My question, what are the key things for you that you would update on since season one?
Well, I think there's a few things we're going to discuss. We'll touch on the musical chairs that is the local elections, see what matters and what doesn't. And then there's been a few developments around the solar farm that we're going to talk about and return to what was the big story this time last year, Clean Air Zone.
We should give some context. We sat in my living room. We've had the first rain in, I reckon, well, substantial rain in 6 weeks, 2 months?
Something like that, yeah.
6 weeks.
My water butt is pretty dry. Not anymore. And it's just, the heavens have just opened. We've got a thunderstorm going on outside.
It's the most dramatic start to a podcast that we've had.
Being stranded for 20 minutes under the M60 underpass as these enormous hailstones came down was, not what I was expecting.
That's the definition of heroism, I think. Waiting under an underpass for 20 minutes to come and record a podcast on the climate emergency.
I was under a bus stop, but never for a second did I doubt that I was going to make it here to the recording.
Okay. So some of the things that we're going to talk about are things that you'll find. Carbon budget for one is a good one to go and listen to episode 2, which is a 3-minute explanation of carbon budgets. But just to remind you, because it's important to set the context as we go into another year of all this, we have Manchester, a carbon budget of 15 million tonnes. It was set up in 2017 and fits all under the commitments we've made as a country and a planet under the Paris Agreement 2015. As of the autumn last year, can anyone remember where we're at?
At least 40% has now gone.
40%. So, yeah, of our 15 million tonnes of CO2, 40% gone, and it's likely to be completely exhausted by 2027 at the latest.
That is within spitting distance.
It is very, very soon.
I mean, we've been saying for many years, typically around summer, when this gets either launched or smuggled into another report, that it's about to run out. But maybe this is the year when 2027 will feel close enough. There's all kinds of reports at these committees that already run way longer than 2027. Every new strategy and action plan now runs longer than 2027. Mm-hmm. The budget will be gone by that point.
Good point. And it's worth remembering that this 15 million tonnes, this carbon budget, was meant to last us all the way until we were zero carbon or net zero, however you want to call it, in 2038 as a city, but then it was meant to last us all the way till the end of the century.
Yeah, that's really important. It isn't that we've exhausted it by 2027 and it was supposed to run till 2030, 2035. This was supposed to last until 2100.
What happens after that?
I think that's a really important question that we should consider on this podcast in more depth, and so I think we'll come back to that. What happens when the carbon budget's gone? How will we describe it? How will we talk about how much overdue we are on our budget, overdrawn on our budget? And how do we expect the council to talk in those terms? You could see a scenario where they get to 15 million tons gone and then quietly put all talk of carbon budgets away.
Can they find another way of talking about the progress that they are making without talking about carbon budgets, if that becomes the embarrassing way? Just try and downgrade that as the way that people think about it, which is already easy to do because we know that carbon budgets isn't an idea that everybody is familiar with. So if you're having to drop an idea that not everybody knows, that's an easy way.
And the whole point of it was to measure sort of where the carbon's coming from, where we need to cut it, and how. And so once it's gone, it's then, well, do we just try and get to net zero as fast as possible?
Well, yes, is the short answer. But really it becomes a question of, for me at least, and this would probably be the angle I take when we record this in future, how hot do you want it? You don't want 1.5 degrees? Because that ship has probably sailed.
Yeah.
You don't want 2 degrees because it will mean drastically changing your life if you live in a middle-class area of Manchester, South Manchester for sure. You don't want that? Okay. How hot do you want it? And how much carbon, therefore, are we allowed to burn before we get there?
So the other way it could play out is trying to make acceptable being overdrawn. Like, it's okay if we're only this amount overdrawn. We're staying within our new limit of being only 25% overdrawn.
And as a country, yes, we do love to live on credit.
Yeah.
But let's all, you know, channel our parents, our grandparents, or our teachers. You know, it's not a good idea to live on credit. We shouldn't live overdrawn. We should try and bring it back into black.
Yeah, I think the more likely scenario is what you mentioned earlier, that we'll just never talk about it again. Pretend we never had a carbon budget.
I'll be honest, when I was earning very, very little, I was self-employed, I went to take money out of the cash machine, you know, back in the day when people took cash out of cash machines, and I never looked at the balance because who needed that sort of stress? And I think MCC are doing a little bit of that. And the whole city is, to be fair.
But some overdrafts you can pay back. This isn't the type of overdraft where you can pay it back in the end.
True. True that.
Not unless you believe in carbon capture.
And sort of recreating summer ice in the Arctic. Refreezing all that methane under the permafrost in Siberia.
Doing some geoengineering.
Yeah. And completely reseeding the Amazon rainforest in like a year.
In a few years' time. But this is why we need to keep talking about it, so that it doesn't just get dropped easily. If they're going to drop it, they're going to have to really do it with a bit of an intent, not just easily stop announcing it.
They're going to drop it, they're going to have to go through our...
Exactly, exactly.
Who remembers the exciting story last year, other than the Clean Air Zone, was... Manchester City Council is going to buy a solar farm.
Ooh. Felt like it needed that kind of noise.
It was genuinely, I was genuinely pleased. It was like, you say we're going to be radical. We need to have greener energy supplied to us. And this is just about council electricity. This isn't for the wider city. And they were like, yeah, we could just go and buy it from someone. But no, we're going to go one step further. We're going to build a solar farm. We're going to buy some land somewhere else. Because, you know, Manchester, not sunny enough. We're going to buy some land down south and build it. I think in the end, they were looking at a site maybe in the north. I've read that in a report. In the north of England.
A sunny nook in the north of England.
So this was the first date in my notes. October 2021. When we've got a news article on the council website saying that they are considering the radical renewable energy option. January 2022, we've got further news that they are strengthening their plans to build a solar farm. It's part of their climate change action plans for 2022-2023. Which is Workstream 1, Buildings and Energy. to progress the large-scale renewable energy generation project, aka solar farm. Now, I should say that when they planned it from the get-go, and I think this is to their credit, they planned a backup. So their preference was a solar farm. The backup was a PPA, power purchase agreement. So one option is we're going to buy some land, build a solar farm that gives us green energy. It puts a certain amount of green energy into the national grid, and then you know that you've generated green energy. You don't get that specific energy yourself unless you're plugged straight into it. So that was one option. That gave you the benefit of guarantees over what the cost would be for the medium term. So promising. The power purchase agreement was plan B, to say if we can't do that, we will go and fund someone else building a new solar farm. Specifically had to be a new green energy generation, not go and buy from an existing provider. Otherwise, you're not actually increasing the amount of green energy going into the grid. So they did look at two options. Come February this year, they talked about it in their scrutiny committee, the Environment Climate Change Scrutiny Committee, in two parts, weirdly. Part A was public. Part B was, everyone get out. We want to talk about this amongst the adults.
Which instantly piques your interest.
It's like, what are they not telling me?
It's like those signs that say no entry.
So that's interesting. So that was the 9th of February. They were, according to what was on the public record and the report that they were reviewing, we are still planning, we're still going through due diligence on this solar farm site, and we hope it will all work out. 2 weeks later, there's an article in the Manchester Evening News to say that Manchester Council has pulled out of buying a solar farm, which it was set to start using by next year. The town hall, which was in talks over buying a site outside of Greater Manchester, has concluded that the scheme is not suitable. And the reason this matters for the council has a carbon budget, all of its emissions, the council's direct emissions, and they had a target to halve their emissions by 2025. And that was heavily dependent on this plan. 7,000 tonnes of CO2. I remember looking through the reports last year when they were talking about this solar farm, and a lot of it was hinged on this.
So what next?
So next they will explore, according to the MEN, they are still open to the idea of a solar farm, but it won't help them for 2025 deadline. So they'll need to enter into a PPA, power purchase agreement, and the downside of that is it doesn't give you that medium-term control over costs and what's happened to energy costs lately.
Did they explain why it wasn't suitable?
Presumably in part B of the scrutiny session, but not on the MEN. I need to find out more, but I await with interest.
That's the bit that I was trying to figure out. If that particular site wasn't suitable for whatever reason, let's just say it wasn't sunny enough. Might be a bit more complex than that.
They got
find
scammed.
Another site.
It was like a fake solar farm. And
but like cardboard solar panels.
Yeah. Someone with a big lamp. But why not try and find another site as the plan B?
Yeah.
So they could start again now rather than going to the PPA. Is that PPA still the better option than now trying to find another site?
The fact is that if they are to make, they've got another year and a half. If you're going to make those savings, I think time is now really of the essence. So I think they're not left with many options. I would commend them in having a plan B from the get-go, but it's just disappointing. I guess my overall feeling is one of disappointment that our first truly radical idea has fallen away and we're left with, we'll buy someone else's. And the argument there is you're doing a good thing because you're still buying, you're creating new green energy that wouldn't have otherwise existed. But that works on the premise that no one else would have invested if you hadn't.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've actually built something yourself, you can sort of say, we did that.
And say to other people in the city, like trying to explain the PPA is a fairly thankless task, but saying to people, we're putting more clean energy into the national grid. Manchester is helping your bills to go down, is a much easier sell than trying to explain the PPA, which will get more people on board to, for other measures.
So that's the solar farm, and that probably has more to run. We hope that they still are actively looking for a site and that we do end up with a shiny new solar farm.
Worth keeping an eye as well on what other councils have been doing, which we like to dip into from time to time. I did a bit of looking into this earlier, and it seems that at the time that Manchester started embarking on this, there were very few other councils that had done this, like less than 10 was one figure that I saw quoted in 2022. But over the past year, quite a few of them have been trying to.
So we really could have been doing things differently.
We were.
So I need to jump on board with the devil's advocate to everything we've just said, which is a story I read around the life term of a solar panel and how we don't have the systems in place globally, this is a global problem, of recycling solar panels. And if they've got a life of 20, 25 years, we're creating a huge problem for 25 years' time if we haven't planned and built processes. And
they can't be upgraded in any way. Or I know nothing about solar technology.
You need very high-grade glass on the panel, apparently. So it's not a matter of recycle a solar panel into a new solar panel. It would degrade and would need to be used for something else. So, which isn't in and of itself a necessary problem. If they can solve that, great. But really, things just need to be put in place so that we don't, in 20 years, have this mountain of solar panels and think, oh, what should we do with that?
That's coming up in 25 years' time. Also means you can train up more people to repair them if they do need to be repaired or replaced, if that is the option, knowing that you need a load more people to go around and do that.
Yeah, it was an angle I'd not heard on the idea of solar, so interesting, I thought. What's next on our recap?
Oh, should we do the clean air zone as a recap?
That clean air zone.
I mean, this is a recap not because so much because there's been a big council meeting or set piece on it, although it does seem that things have been going on behind the scenes. It's more like stock take. What were you doing this time last year? Maybe reading yet another angry article about the clean air zone. Yeah. Because it was pretty big this time last year.
Oh yeah, it really, really got people very angry.
Very angry. Because there was arguments it was another tax.
Oh, there was all sorts of wild conspiracy theories flying around.
There's been more recently a conflation of clean air zones and 15-minute cities.
Oh, yes.
This argument that it's another form of lockdown.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, that does seem to have a fundamental misunderstanding of what a 15-minute city is.
Yeah.
Some, not all, I think, means you cannot go further than 15 minutes.
How dare you bring all my shopping and everything else that I need within 15 minutes of my house? How dare you?
But I think it was that the air pollution readings were being faked to say that it was worse than it is, to bring in this new stealth tax, and the all of the bike lanes that were being built as well was intentionally to slow down the traffic, to make the pollution worse. I mean, I don't know which one people believed, whether pollution actually was worse or whether they were lying about it being worse.
I was also struck back in 2022, this time last year, that the anti-clean air zone people got quite organised. Mm. So there was a group, I think it was called Rethink.
Rethink GM. Yeah.
So they got quite organised. I say organised, like Facebook pages. There were demos. There was a pony.
I see their bumper pony stickers. I see their bumper stickers on vans.
Yeah,
all the
was a pony on the tram as well. What? I can't remember what the link was, but they got organised, and therefore the slightly incoherent Bumbling hadn't anticipated this kind of opposition from Burnham and others, was kind of shown up by their very, like, you know, clear, strident arguments.
Yeah, it's just a sad state of affairs when the anti-Clean Air Zone group are more organised than the actual Clean Air Zone group.
Exactly. And they hadn't anticipated the kind of hostility and didn't really have a positive vision for it.
No, the case was never really made.
It was, this is happening. Yeah.
Like, why does... I think a lot of people, because you can't see air pollution, they don't think it's a real threat. You know, it's not like back when we had the smogs, you could see it and you couldn't breathe and you couldn't see. So then we had the original Clean Air Act in like 1950 something. Whereas this, because it's invisible, but it's still killing people, still, you know, leading to strokes and even... Like, it's been found to affect the development of babies in the womb. But I think a lot of people are just saying, no, that's not true. There's nothing wrong with the air quality. Or, you know, well, so what if it does? It's just too expensive to do this. I don't want to pay it.
And there were others who didn't even fall into that group, but who the first they knew of it was that there was maybe a little sign in their area saying this will shortly become a, you know, that those little clean air zones. Yeah. They're the image in every MEN article. So it wasn't very well explained, communicated with people. And then when they met with this uproar, that's partly why there was then the decision to pause it, to rethink it, which is what's been happening a bit more quietly, I think deliberately quietly, by the politicians. They wanted to try and take some of the heat out of it for the past year.
The Clean Air Zone covered all of Greater Manchester and applied to all commercial vehicles. Did not apply to private vehicles. Then there was the uproar, the under review, the hashtag rethink. And what they brought back was same Clean Air Zone, no narrowing, an ultra low emission zone or anything like that, same parameters, same borders, and all of the same cameras, the ANPR cameras would check your license. And if you were in a commercial vehicle and driving an uncompliant vehicle, you get an email saying, did you know that your vehicle is not compliant? And that would be that. No fees, nothing, but no changes either. Because they said they'd put too much time and effort and they didn't want to go back to consultation stage. So they were just going to launch the Clean Air Zone, but without any charges. So that's where we're at with Manchester, unless you've heard anything since then.
The only other thing, but it is still being modelled, is that they are trying to find a way to pay for upgrades. So if you are a non-compliant vehicle, rather than just saying you can't go here or fining you, which is the two options, you will be helped to upgrade.
Yeah, they're calling it an investment-led strategy, but the government is not convinced by this. I know that in London, so they're expanding the ULEZ there to all the outer boroughs of London.
The Tory boroughs.
Yeah. And they do have a scrappage scheme, but I don't think it will cover everything. It'll be for people on low incomes and sole traders.
But that's interesting, right? So yeah, let's get into how other cities are framing it, because Manchester likes to think of itself as the first, number one, leading the way. But on this one, we are very much being overtaken, or have been overtaken.
Oh, yeah.
So Birmingham's applies to private vehicles as well.
Yeah. And I know, I think it's, so Bradford, Newcastle and Sheffield all have them now. I don't know if they apply to private vehicles, but they have some sort of clean air zone. And then down south, you've got Brighton and Oxford.
London is being well discussed at the moment as
Bristol. I think Newcastle and Sheffield are the two newest ones as well.
So that's interesting, right? We are way behind now. Way behind. That's embarrassing.
And cities that are comparable, like Birmingham, Newcastle, you can't, people might say, oh, well, Bristol's different, London's different. Yeah, they are all different, but those are the types of cities that we should be having the same.
Yeah.
We've just handled it really badly.
We really have. Yeah. I think Leeds might have scrapped theirs as well. I don't know what they're doing.
So you have some company.
Yeah, I'm sure that they must have to do something because it's a legal requirement. Yeah.
When the government's not convinced by your plan, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah. Greater Manchester seems to be relying a lot on upgrading its bus fleet to bring down emissions, but I just don't really buy it. I think something like 80% of the fleet is already compliant. So
the B buses.
Yeah. Oh, I saw one. I saw a B bus in the wild yesterday.
Buzzing away.
Is that true? 80% of the buses are
something like that. I'm sure that's what I read. So, you know, bringing these new buses in, I don't see how it's going to make such a massive difference, especially if you think about roads like Princess Parkway, for example. I mean, it's 90% cars.
All of what we've just talked about, this investment-led clean air zone, the issue about implementing a clean air zone without providing the funds to allow people, and that's where you could bring in private vehicles because it makes it easier, providing the funding to enable people to make a change. We've just seen the, not a U-turn, but a slowdown in the promises from the opposition. Labour Party have said, previously they were like, from year one, we'll put £28 billion a year into climate sustainable investments. And now we're saying, from on year one, we won't have the projects. We won't have the level of projects. We won't have done the due diligence. We won't be ready, sort of shovel-ready propositions. And actually they are, in my view, misled a little bit and linked it to fiscal rules and the trust debacle last autumn, whereas investment is an entirely different beast, and there was no sign that the markets were up in arms about the idea of decarbonising, because that's better for the economy in the long run. So, interesting that you've got councils, and particularly Labour councils, up and down the land that are saying, we've got projects, but not the money. And you've got a potential UK Labour government waiting in the wings saying, well, we're going to have the money, but not the projects.
Are you suggesting that maybe they give the money to the local ready-to-go projects?
Well, from the get-go, you could say, it is our intention right now, and we've gone a little bit wider than Manchester politics here, but it's relevant. We're a year, 18 months out of an election. We are going to put £28 billion into climate projects on year one. So councils, you need certainty. You need to work up your plans. We highly recommend you do that.
Particularly as there are a number of major Labour councils around the country. So that they, if they claim, well, we're in opposition, we can't possibly start thinking about what projects. I would dispute that a bit. I think there's plenty that you can do in opposition, but let's go with that. They are in power in London. They are in power in Manchester and other places.
So I think there was a bit more playing of politics there than genuinely saying we don't have the projects to put money into. It was more the sense of we're going to be dragged across the coals about spending loads of money that we don't have.
Or it's saying it's okay to wait for the climate action, and what they'll say is, in year one we're putting this much into NHS, and it's not politically acceptable to say we don't know what we're going to spend in the NHS, so we're starting in year two. But it is still politically acceptable to say we're going to wait for another year on the climate actions.
Yeah. On the clean air zone, the other angle to it that I can see
is if you were to ask about radically changing the plan, which we would like them to do, putting words in your mouth there, I would like them to do, the justification was one, it would take too much time to rework things and go through the consultation. Therefore, we would put at risk the legal deadline that's committed to by the Secretary of State that I think is now 2026. It was pushed back. I think it's 2026.
Yeah.
Now, the MCC will say, but this was organised at a GMCA level, Greater Manchester Combined Authority. Is Andy Burnham's problem, the mayor. But I just want to draw everyone back to when the Clean Air Zone, as it was originally planned, got signed off with a twisted elbow behind the back, really, by all of the councils within the Combined Authority. And when it came to Manchester's scrutiny committee, environmental scrutiny committee, they looked at it and said, well, you know, this has got to go to the executive for sign off sort of tomorrow. We don't really have any license to request changes or push back at all. So they recommended it because they sort of had to. But the explicit reassurance from Tracy Rawlins was, but we can always choose to go further. We can always design a Manchester way. So just remember, every time someone says it's a GMCA thing, that we got assurances from the executive member for the environment that we could do things differently. You remember that?
Yeah.
Do things differently.
Catchy. In Manchester. Might like take it, off. Yeah.
So don't buy it when they say that they've got to stick to and put it all on GMCA.
They just quite secretly enjoy having somebody else to blame, yeah, and Andy Burnham being less popular.
We see you, though. We see you. Yes, GMCA probably need to up the game on the Clean Air Zone, but we see all the individual councils, you signed up to it. So the other thing that's really important in a recap is there was a little thing called an election. And that meant that there were some council changes. Not every council seat was up for an election. Chloe, do you know how many were?
It's about a third. As we know, there's three councillors for every ward, and they hold their position normally for 3 years and then are up once every 3 years. So give or take, it's about a third. So about 30, just over 30.
And we don't have favourites at SEM?
No.
We hate
all our children equally.
Strict policy on that front. But anything of note in terms of councillors who have either stood down or arrived?
So Woodhouse Park is now entirely green.
A green surge? A green spread?
Yeah. Green springs.
Make it sound like a contagion.
Green spread sounds like fairly rank butter. So for context, 3 years ago there were no greens in this ward, which is
3 years ago.
Yeah.
Really? That quickly? Yeah, yeah, you're right. Sorry, just surprised me when you
said it. Yeah. So it isn't this long-standing green ward that they've just been topping up in recent years. It was like most wards, Labour. Mm-hmm. The councillors in question had been there for years, and then it was targeted by the Greens in 2021.
That was Rob Nunney.
And then the Green sort of national handbook is target to win, and the tactic that's proposed there is that you go for the same ward because hopefully you've been able to show people just what a good job you're doing, so you go for a second one, which they got last year, 2022, with Astrid Johnson. And then they rolled the dice again in Woodhouse Park.
From what I read of the election coverage, the Green councillors just made themselves very visible, were doing a lot of work, taking on a lot of casework and getting things done. I mean, obviously not everybody agreed with that. But that was, yeah, just what I read. And so I think that obviously helped them to be successful with a third councillor.
Interesting political tactic with the Target to Win campaign is to, yes, target one seat because they don't have the resources to really push in multiple seats or wards. But to choose a ward that has got very low turnout. And Woodhouse Park, I think, was something around 18%.
It was around 20%, 18%. Mm. Because you can make more of a difference if you get 1,000 people to...
Well, that and a less cynical interpretation, because it could be seen as quite cynical, would be, why have you got really low turnout?
Yeah.
It sort of suggests that you're being taken for granted, or you're not being engaged by the politicians that are there to serve you. So it makes sense, actually, for someone to come and say, we are the change candidate. We think we can do a better job here.
That's true. And Woodhouse Park, for any listeners who don't know, which could include many people in Manchester, right? I don't think it's a known area of the city. Like, it's not like Deansgate, where the ward is also the name of a place that people know and walk past. It's a fairly unknown little corner of South Manchester, not far from here. It's not a ward where a lot of resources would have been put, as they might have done in the city centre. Even if people don't see the benefits of them directly, there's a sense that people pay attention to you if you're in one of those more central wards.
Interesting that they won the seat, a third green seat, even with all of the plans and promises of the investment in Withinshaw Forum. The Labour Party in Manchester have been making a big deal of that, understandably so, but they didn't get the benefit of it in Woodhouse Park.
And to Lauren's point, which is what I hear as well, that the Greens, you know, just did work really hard. Labour knew this was what they were doing. I mean, they kind of knew the past 2 years, but if it wasn't fairly obvious, this was what they're doing. So why not make yourself more visible?
I mean, if I were living there and, you know, the Labour Council's talking about, oh yeah, we've got all these grand plans for this thing, I'd be like, well, it's not happening now. But these guys have sorted this thing out for me already. So they're doing a job and you're just promising me big shiny things which might not even come.
Are you suggesting that Manchester Manchester City Council would promise things and not deliver?
Never.
Okay, so that's Woodhouse Park and another Green councillor.
Taking us to 4 in total.
Ooh.
Again, 3 years ago. Zero, and zero for a number of years. There was a period of greens in the wilderness. It was sort of like a brownie wilderness at that point, a ready brownie wilderness.
And how many Lib Dems or other opposition?
That was the surprise for me, because there were not one but two Lib Dem gains. So one, perhaps the one that I would have expected more, was a gain in Ancoats and Beswick. Also, I think the first trans member of council?
That's right, Chris
Norbury?
Yes.
Yeah. And then in Didsbury West, Richard Kilpatrick, who has previously been a councillor. So I'm not in that ward, I don't see the literature, but I bet that he also campaigned on a similar line to the Greens, in that, you remember me, I worked really hard for you. He was deemed to have been one of the more hard working councillors at the time, and it was something of a shock when he didn't get elected in maybe 2021. So that's a opposition gain of 3, which when you put it through like the Manchester terms is really quite significant. So that gives us an opposition of 7
out of
93, but we had, that was down to 2 a couple of years ago. So in a short amount of time, that's quite a big gain. And there's a few extra, well, some of these were triggered last year, but there's a few extra perks by having a few more. You know, you can propose motions, which we've already started to see happen a bit before this local election. So it isn't just a kind of one or two individuals. It's still a small rump, but they can do a few more things if they work together.
Yeah. I guess I've got our, imaginary listener on my shoulder. saying, why should I care? Bigger opposition, they can put motions in, why should I care?
Good question, imaginary listener. Is it like a little parrot?
Just like a parrot.
Just like a little parrot.
You've met him?
I have met him. Yeah, I do often wonder, well, I used to wonder what he was doing on your shoulder. But now I know, and it all makes sense. He's asking niche devil's advocate questions about local politics. What a little person on your shoulder to have. good question. And I also don't think it matters too much. Some of the opposition, we've made this point ourselves as CM on the blog, that some of the opposition parties maybe focus so much on the elections, understandable on one level, but spend less time thinking, like, if I do get elected, what are we going to do with that? Because arguably there isn't any much use having just been there unless you think of what you can do with it. Even if there are certain constraints, given that the figures and the power that you present and the way that you'll try and be silenced or ridiculed. But it's what you do with those people being elected. The fact that you're there doesn't in itself mean too much.
I feel like there have been moments where it's been useful having an opposition member in the room. I'm thinking back to the Ancoats.
Great Ancoats Street.
Great Ancoats Street. And just the debacle around the European Boulevard that we're going to get, which got rid of all the cycle lanes. And it's just as congested as it ever was. But I do remember Alan Good, Lib Dem, because it is his ward, really taking aim at the absolute mess that they've made of it and just a squandered opportunity. So I was appreciative of that.
Got a bit more license to do that when you're in the opposition.
Yeah.
So kind of interesting then as well that there's a second Lib Dem that's in Ancoats and Beswick. Like, there may be quite like local reasons why people are really pissed off with Labour. That doesn't necessarily mean that there's this Lib Dem wave north of central Manchester.
Oh, we've got the Ancoats Mobility Hub that's going to be built soon, apparently. Like, they're starting work on it. Do you know about this?
No.
It's just a car park.
It's a mobility hub.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so basically it's public money that's been given to private developers to build this quote-unquote mobility hub. It's a multi-story car park that I think is going to have some green things growing on it. And it'll also be some
other green
moss.
Mold.
Yeah. There's also going to be some EV charging points in there, maybe like one or two bike parking spaces.
Just one or two?
Fuck sake.
I don't know. It was,
When is a car park not a car park? When it's a mobility hub.
I'm excited.
Anything on other impacts of the election that you'd like to cover? Scrutiny, meeting changes, anything that's pertinent?
The only other one to flag that we are keeping a beady eye on is just to see if it is a sign of going backwards, is the rebranding of some of the scrutiny committees. There's often a little bit of a switch around after the local elections, not just new people in their wards, but they have to rearrange who's on the scrutiny committees and things like that. Some people stay the same, some people move around. They sometimes revisit the remit of them. Two have had their remit revisited. One is the economy, which is now called Economy and Regeneration. Okay. See what that means. But then more pertinently for this podcast, the Climate and Environment Change Scrutiny Committee is now the Climate, Environment and Neighbourhoods Scrutiny Committee.
Which is interesting.
So we've lost the word change, climate change. It's just climate.
I think it's climate. No, I think it's neighbourhoods in. Okay. I don't think anything's gone out, so it's just become a bit more unwieldy.
And that's particularly interesting because of the campaign that Sam ran a couple of years ago to have a seventh additional scrutiny committee dedicated to climate emergency. And they refused that and instead did a rejig and kept six scrutiny committees, but took neighbourhoods out of one to leave a dedicated climate change scrutiny committee. So that is interesting if they're putting neighbourhoods back in.
Exactly. So what does this mean? Like, okay, the best faith interpretation, not the one I'm necessarily saying is the right one, is that each scrutiny committee has to respond to like a bit of the organisation that they call directorates. There's a neighbourhood directorate. It didn't answer to any particular one, so they had to map it to one, so they mapped it to this one. And again, the best faith interpretation is that they'd say, oh, well, this gives us a chance to discuss really good neighbourhood climate action, like the ward plans, which I think we're going to talk about in a future episode. Okay, great. That's the best faith interpretation. The worst is that this is a... We'll go back more to the situation that we had previously, which is just shoving a whole load of other stuff in the meeting. Yeah. Things around neighbourhoods are important, but they often take up quite a lot of time because they're often important but quite like local discussion. Often it's something that ward councillors know a lot about, so it's really important to have those discussions. But is there time in the meetings to talk about that and then the higher level strategy about the carbon budgets? We might get a bit of competing for space, and you might get more things creeping into the agenda that are not climate, like, you know, the back to fly tipping and stuff like that.
Strong sense that both of those could be true. It might have been done for the best faith reasons, but also just by expanding that remit, we are going to get more of the recycling, waste management. All of that stuff was in the remit, to be honest, before. But yeah, if you're taking your... The thing we saw the most of last year was the climate change action plans and things like that.
Which was sort of more high level like strategy, but yeah, there was quite a lot of discussion
and
about
that. And if it gets squeezed, you could see them sort of saying, well, should we do this 3 times a year?
Exactly.
Every 6 months?
One to watch.
Where did all the neighbourhoods chat go then?
Good question. I think it could maybe go into the one that's called Communities and Equalities.
Yeah.
If I was king of the council, also known as the council leader, that's where I'd put it.
You can just see the mask slipped there. Chloe's got ambitions.
What, to be a pseudo-monarchist? Not even just leader, but like make it more royal than it needs to be. Playing a long game. What an ominous note to end on.
I know. And so that's that. Episode 1. Season 2, episode 1.
I think that sets us up nicely for the rest of the season. Filled us in on the key things.
Sort of the same topics. Some have moved forward. Not many have moved forward. Some are still treading water. A couple have moved back a little bit.
It's helped me get back up to speed. I was feeling a little bit out of the loop.
Well, so please.
It's been useful.
As a reminder to everybody as well, that there's several months here, March, April, May, not a lot happens in terms of at least public-facing council activity.
Because they've all got elections to win.
They've got elections to win, so March is about signing off budgets, and then from April onwards, it's purdo and you can't say anything about anything. So those early spring months are funny months, not as much happens as you might think.
That works for me quite nicely, actually. So record podcasts sort of May, June through to February, March. Few months to work on the garden, just in spring, get everything ready, then back into the next season. So we'll look at a bit of scrutiny committee items like we did last year, but I think we might try and draw out some of our own themes that aren't strictly on the work programme for the council. Maybe bringing things in where there are links. I'd really like to get some guest speakers to do a bit more of a deep dive in. So if you've got any suggestions, both Laura and Chloe, but also you, imaginary listener on my shoulder, we would love to hear them. So things you'd like to hear us talk about, or guests that you would like to come and do a more thorough job. You couldn't get a more thorough job than what we've just done.
And it could just be on one thing, like if something's happened in your neighbourhood or hasn't happened, cycle lane hasn't been built, if something's been, you know, if something's been promised and haven't happened, we're just as interested in that as... There's plenty of other podcasts that are kind of championing all the great action. That's a fairly crowded market. We don't We don't need to be doing that.
We're just here for a whinge.
Yeah, exactly.
So come and moan with us.
If there's something you want to whinge about,
here's the place.
Here's the place.
I'm putting that on the description for the podcast. Chloe, Lauren, thank you so much for
thank you
venturing out in the thunderstorm.
We've dried off, I think.
It was worth it, and I enjoyed the drama.
It's very exciting.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Bye. Bye-bye. You were saying goodbye.